Welcome to C3 San Diego. Need something fresh, real, and powerful in your life? Connect with us on social media, get live stream service notifications, podcasts, and up-to-date information on upcoming events. We are so glad you're joining us for a powerful, life-transforming message from one of our C3 San Diego pastors. We would love to hear about how God is impacting your life through this ministry. Please share your experience with us at info@c3sandiego.com. If you'd like to be a part of what C3 Church is doing in the city of San Diego and beyond, you can contribute financially by going to c3give.com and choosing the giving option that works best for you. We hope you enjoy this message.
I can't tell you what an honor it is to be here tonight. I came to C3 to the Central Campus 4 years ago last week on my second date with my wife. And I'll tell you a little bit about what the past 4 years has looked like during this talk, but I just want to take a minute and honor Emma and Drew. Drew actually plays a big part in my C3 story. It was the 5 o'clock service. I came to the 11 o'clock service with my wife. It was our second date. She was telling me all about her church. It sounded like an amazing place, and I just wanted to go and check it out. I was plugged in, kind of, to a church, and my wife was telling me about this church. I went to the 11 o'clock service, such an amazing word from Jurgen, and such an amazing community of people. We went out to lunch afterwards, ran some errands, and then all these people are talking about going back to the 5 later that night, and I wasn't from a place where you went to church twice on a Sunday, right? Like, it just was like, why would you go back and hear the same message twice? And they said, no, it's probably a different message and a different pastor. And that message was preached from Drew. And I saw something in that that not only was Jurgen the senior pastor there, but he was the center of the front row, the loudest voice cheering Drew on from the front of the stage. And I knew that this was good soil, because that's the way leaders get raised up. When a leader willingly lays down his opportunity in order to let somebody step in and raise up. So I just want to honor, let's honor Drew and Emma. They're incredible leaders. And you guys can take your seats. You guys can take your seats. Thank you. And such an honor to be here at South. It's an incredible building. It's an incredible period of growth. Just the past 4 years, seeing what's happened in our church, and also seeing what's happened in my life as a result of being planted in good soil. And the soil that Jurgen and Leanne, our leaders, have tilled for us, it, with blood, sweat, and tears, the sacrifices that they've made. If you're new tonight, welcome to an amazing church. Welcome to a place where people grow, where fruit comes out of people's lives, where pasts are turned around to bring incredible victory, not only for people individually, but for the communities that they go out and touch. I'm so honored to be here tonight. And I also want to give acknowledge Travis and Suzanne, your baby announcement video. If you're not friends with them on social media and you have not seen their baby announcement video, it is completely next level and totally ruins any future baby announcement video that anybody could potentially make. You ruined it for everybody. Thank you very much. Before we get started, though, I just want to open in prayer. Heavenly Father, open our eyes, open our hearts, open our minds for all you have for us today. God, please give me a humble spirit. Don't let any stone go unturned. Use me as a vessel. Let your spirit flow through me and to those that you've intended to touch tonight. We praise you in advance for all of the fruit coming out of this message, and we thank you for it in Jesus' name. So, like I said, I've been at C3 for 4 years. I came here on my second date, and when I was first asked to share my testimony, I was looking for something to, I'm like, I, I'm And I'm outside. We live in La Jolla Shores, and we have kind of an interesting house. It was originally 3 two-bedroom apartments, but we tore down some walls, connected the whole space. It's awesome. It's right near the beach. But as sort of a legacy issue with our house, we have these 3 front doors. So I wanted to spruce up the place when we got married. I went from having like career bachelor, tons of roommates, a living fly-by-the-seat-of-my-pants bachelor to married with 2 small children in 4 years. From our second date at the church to 4 years later last week, there's a lot that's happened, a lot that's changed, but we had these 3 front doors, and I wanted to like just add something there. So I bought these 3 plants, 1 for every door, and I got them home. And could you bring up the slide of these plants? The plant on the right, I realized we had these 3 doors, but we only really used 1 to get into the house. So I put 2 plants next to 1 door, and then I had this extra plant. So the 2 plants that I put next to the front door, I put them in like big pots and they had plenty of room to grow, good soil, watered them. And then this other plant I just left in the little pot that it came from the nursery in, and I kind of put it off to the table on the side. They all got the same amount of water, but there were 2 plants that grew. And my wife came to me and she said, you know, we got to talk about this other plant because it's almost dead. And it's really, you know, we should probably just throw it away. And I went outside and I looked at this plant and it had like maybe, you know, 12 leaves left on it. And it was looking about the same size as it came to us. It hadn't really grown. It had just withered and died. And it, because we left it in this little tiny portable pot that it came from the nursery in. And I'm preparing my testimony, and I was like, you know, that's exactly my life. That my whole life, I'd wanted to keep myself portable. I never wanted to let myself get planted anywhere because I thought if I was planted, I'd be stuck. But what happens is when you keep yourself portable, when you go and get a plant from the nursery, it comes in a small pot so you can bring it home. Because if they put them in these huge, if they planted it in the ground, you wouldn't be able to get it anywhere. But when you get it home, you're supposed to plant it in a bigger pot so it has room to grow. If you don't plant it in a bigger pot, the roots just kind of grow onto themselves and they become what's called root bound. I didn't even know this was a thing until I saw my plant. And the roots grow into a big ball and they suffocate the plant. And I realized that in not letting my roots go down into soil, not giving space to grow, not really allowing the plant to actually live somewhere, not allowing myself to ever get planted anywhere, I'd really limited the potential for growth in my life. And there were a lot of things that were dying in my life. But when what happened to the plant, actually, I felt a little convicted about our gardening skills and my responsibility for stewardship over this life. So I broke it out of its little containment unit, and that you couldn't really see it in the picture, but that pot had gotten like really kind of bumpy and gnarly because there had been all this pressure on the pot. So I had to break the pot off. I untangled the roots, replanted it in a bigger pot, put good soil around it, and it actually started to grow. And I don't know if you have it started to grow. It's a lot better than that. That was a few months ago. But all of these other plants started to grow around it. And when there wasn't any oxygen in the soil, the seeds that were in the soil couldn't grow. But when I put it in the seeds that had been there all along, all that potential for growth that was in with the plants started to grow. And what I found is when I got planted in good soil at this church, when I started to grow, there was a community that grew up around me. That we're not just blessed so we can live successful lives on our own. We're blessed and we end up blessing the lives of those around us when we start to grow, that we're bringing each other along for the ride. So if you're new here, it's good soil. It's a great place. So when I was a little kid, part of my not submitting under authority, I'm a child of divorce. I was kidnapped from I was born in France. I was kidnapped when I was 2, brought to Canada. In France, the father always gets custody. My mom was married to an emotionally abusive alcoholic. She didn't want him to raise me, so she brought me back to Canada where she was from so the divorce could take place there. And while I was going through my parents' divorce, I found church. Actually, strangely, I went to church by myself for almost 2 years. A friend of mine invited me. He invited me. He brought me there 1 week. He never went back. And then I would walk to church. I have no idea why my mother would allow me to walk 8 or 10 blocks to church every week by myself as a four-year-old child. Like these days, you would get arrested by CPS and the child would be put a ward of the state. But somehow it worked out. And I ended up in church. And even though there was all of this stuff going on in my life, I found peace in that place. But I was learning about that gospel about around the same time that I was learning about the gospel of the other hero of Christmas. And when I found out that guy was just a story, I thought that Christians believed in fairy tales, and I stopped going to church, and all this hope that I had was just crap, you know. I made an inner vow not to trust adults. And it just, I carried it with me. Like, I wouldn't allow myself to get planted. I wouldn't submit under authority. And it was actually at this church, I had an experience. If you're not signed up for Emerge, get signed up for Emerge. It's an amazing conference. It'll change your life. I went to Emerge when I was a few months into coming to C3. And a year later, we got engaged 5 months into our relationship, got married 10 months into our relationship, got pregnant right away, and by the following year's Emerge, we were just a couple of months away from having our little girl. There was a lot that had happened in my first year and a half at C3. But I saw something at Emerge. How many of you guys know Jeff Forbes? Yeah. So Jeff had gotten saved at the first Emerge that I went to. And he came in kind of hard, like arms crossed. Something happened to him that first night of worship where he just melted, ended up getting saved during the conference, and he was on the winning team for the whole conference. And the following year, he was raised up to be captain of the team that he got saved on the year before. And we're in the tent on the Friday night of Emerge, and I saw all the team captains up on stage, and Jeff was up on stage. And I had this moment where I realized that he'd submitted to God and submitted to authority. And on the stage that night, there were a bunch of captains, but none of them were pastors from this church. All of them were leaders that the pastors had raised up. And then the pastors had submitted under the leadership of the captains that they had elevated. And I saw Jeff up on that stage, and he won the championship that year again. And I realized without even knowing it that I had actually submitted under the authority of a pastor. And in submitting under authority, my life had been raised up, and there was breakthrough that happened in my life that could have never happened had that first not happened. And in being, allowing myself to go down, I'd been raised up. And I had this moment of just like, I just got wrecked standing in that place, realizing what had happened without me even knowing it. The church was such an amazing place that something I'd fought against my entire life had changed, and I'd barely even participated in it consciously. It was just such an amazing culture that I'd been brought into that it had changed me fundamentally, that God had done the work, but the culture had brought it out, and in community and with great leadership, I'd been raised up. So this is, I can't say enough about our church. So I've been asked to share my testimony with you, and I'll give you the quick version. Like I told you, I was a rebel from the beginning. When I was 3 years old, I was on a soccer team. And it was, you know, three-year-old soccer, but I took it very seriously. We were on the championship team that year. I was tall for my age, so I was on a team with 4 and 5-year-olds. We dominated that entire league, took the championship. But the next year, they thought that I had some leadership potential, so they made me captain of a team of 3-year-olds that had never played soccer before and were not very good at it. And instead of seeing this as an opportunity to raise up the next generation of soccer players, I saw this as being persecuted by being put on a team with kids that weren't gonna win. So the first time that my new team played my old team, I tore off my jersey and started scoring goals for my old team and said, I am not doing this. And they said, this is your opportunity. If you're not willing to do this, you can't do this. And I said, fine, I'm done with this whole league. I'm done with soccer. And that's kind of the attitude that I had towards a lot of things. It was either the way I wanted to do it, or I wasn't going to do it at all. I had this little attitude of like, I'm just going to take my crayons and go home. And I took that into my life. I discovered drugs and alcohol when I was about 12 years old. And in that, I found some freedom. My shoulders dropped. I felt like I could breathe easier. My entire life fell apart. My relationship with my parents fell apart. My relationship with schools fell apart. I got kicked out of a lot of different schools in junior high. It was never my fault. It was always their fault. It was the school system was not, I was told at an early age that I was bright, and I was convinced that the school system was not created for people like me. It's their fault. My parents either loved me too much sometimes, or didn't love me enough other times, or didn't love me in the right way. There were all of these things that it's their fault, I'm a victim. And I used to believe that being a victim came from a place of low self-esteem. Being a victim actually comes from a place of elevated self-worth, that I can't be a victim unless I believe that I deserve better. So if you've got this idea that the entire world needs to change in order for you to be okay, that is not a place of low self-esteem, just FYI. The good news is, and we'll get to this later, that through the power of Christ, I can do all things through Christ, in Christ, because he gives me strength. That I don't have to be a victim to my circumstances. My circumstances can stay the same, and through God's power, I can rise above. But we'll save that for a little bit later. You don't need to be a victim. If you need to shred something, if you're thinking of it, you can write it down. No more victim. So, anyway, junior high, drug addiction, things fell apart. By the time I was 16, things had gotten so bad at home that I fought with my parents. I didn't want to come home anymore. In the summer between my 10th and 11th grade year, I spent probably 20 or 30 days sleeping on the beach. That I would try to stay over at friends' houses. I would try to manipulate situations so I didn't have to stay on the beach. I knew that people didn't want me around. The way I drank and the way I did drugs made me a liability. When you're trying to keep things away from people's parents and you've got this guy that has no off switch and is really inappropriate when they're not sober, you don't want that guy at your house, and I was that guy. So I grew up in La Jolla. I would go down to the beach and try to stay awake through the night, usually pass out and wake up sometimes wet. I didn't know why. It could be the ocean, it could be me, maybe. I think it's the ocean. But when you're 16 and like picking things out of your hair, like seaweed and other stuff, in waking up to that with like people running by on the beach, that's not normal and it's not good. And I knew that there was something that needed to change. I was still convinced that it was everybody else's fault, but there was somebody that came into my life that had gotten sober, gone into a wilderness rehab and gotten sober and come into AA and told me I didn't need to live the way I was living anymore. And I thought, do you have any fun? What do you do for fun? Do you go? You go to meetings where people talk about themselves, and then you go out to coffee and they talk about themselves some more, and maybe on a really good night you get to go bowling. Is that your life? Because that's what I thought that was. And But he told me a lot about other things going on in his life, how he'd restored relationships with his little brother, and that was something that was really important to me. I had a little brother 11 years and 1 week younger than me, and I had robbed his piggy bank. I'd been a bad big brother, and I desperately in my heart wanted to be a good big brother to that little boy. And he, my friend Eric, had restored his relationship with his brother that was almost the same age as mine, and it gave me a little bit of hope. He had restored a relationship with his parents, had finished high school. His dad had co-signed a loan to buy a truck. That was amazing. He was in a relationship. He had a job. He had all these things that I didn't have, and he made it seem cool enough that I was willing to give it a shot, but it still kind of felt like punishment. And that was the thing I got sober then. I was sober for 2.5 years. I was depressed most of the time. Sobriety felt like a punishment. It didn't feel like freedom. It felt like the thing that gave me freedom I no longer had access to, and I was trying to do it on my own power. And that's actually kind of a good definition for religion in some ways, you know, that where I feel like there's all of these rules that are put on me that are taking away my freedom, and I never feel like I'm quite good enough, and all of that feels oppressive. And when I think that God is like that, when I think that God just wants me to conform without ever transforming me or filling me with his power, that's the way it works out. And I had that experience sober 2.5 years, miserable, suicidally miserable, still hanging out with active drug addicts and feeling like I couldn't get a break. And I would watch my friends do drugs and see the freedom come over their face. And I longed for that. And there was a night where I bought 2 grams of cocaine and 1 gram of heroin, which is a lot. For anybody that doesn't know that, it's enough to kill an elephant. And I'd have these conversations with God where it would be, and these are bad conversations to have, don't do this. But I'd have these conversations with God, and in this particular night, I had this conversation where I said, if you exist and you don't want me to die, you'll save me. But if you don't, at least I'll be free. And at 18 years old, that's a really terrible place to be. And right after I'd internally said that prayer, a friend of mine who had just shot a huge speedball turned to me and he said, Morgan, you know, I've known you since we were kids, and I want you to know that when you were getting high, I freaking hated you. You were an obnoxious something I can't say in church. And if you want to get high, don't expect me to want to hang out. And I was so spooked that I literally gave the drugs away and left. But that didn't keep me sober. I ended up relapsing a few months later, and in a couple of months destroyed my life. And I got so up against myself in that. I lost a job, I lost a relationship, I lost where I was living, just like boom, boom, boom. Dropped out of college. There were all of these things just poof. And I found myself working at the Starbucks that I'd quit to go take a good job at an ad agency. And they'd hired me back, and then I got written up for things I should have been fired for several times in 1 month, for like stashing a bottle in the bathroom, showing up drunk and belligerent when I wasn't on shift, making drinks for my friends. Like, I mean, just stuff that I really should have been like, you need to go. But my boss believed in me, and she kept giving me chance after chance after chance. And this one morning I came in, it was a kind of a bad night, not the worst night, but I came in and I was physically detoxing from alcohol and cocaine, and I had a panic attack behind the bar, spilled a bunch of coffee on myself, freaked out, ran in the back, and my boss came back and she's like, what's wrong with you? And I started telling her all the circumstances. Oh, my girlfriend left, I got kicked out of my house, all of that stuff, and it was a bad night. And she's like, this has been a bad month. You're not the same person that you used to be when you worked here before. And I'm going to take you off the schedule for 8 days. You need to go back to those meetings you used to go to. And if you don't, you don't have a job here anymore. And she gave me a piece of paper to get signed showing that I'd been to these meetings, like a Starbucks court card. I mean, it was the most ridiculous thing. I didn't even think it was legal. And I was kind of offended, but also touched, but offended, and wondering, you know, like, if I had, like, legal grounds here. and I just, I was so overwhelmed with emotion. I went in the little back bathroom in that Starbucks. I looked in the mirror, and for the first time in my life, like, I saw the reality of my life, that I'd become an alcoholic, that I was a drug addict, that my life needed to change dramatically, and that I had no power to do that on my own. And I got down on my knees. I prayed to a God that I didn't understand and didn't completely believe in, and just said, God, help me. And in that moment, he took it. I haven't had a drink or a drug in over 22 years. But I'll tell you something. I'll tell you something, that he only will take what we'll give him. And I gave him my addiction. But I still hung on to the rest of my life because I had hope in other things. I had hope that if I could just figure out a relationship, finishing college, getting a good job, getting a house, getting all of those things, once I ticked off this list of all of those accomplishments that are supposed to make you feel good about yourself, then my shoulders would drop, then I'd feel comfortable in my own skin, then everything would work out. And I spent the next year, 10 years trying to work that out on my own power. And I nearly destroyed my life. I was physically sober, but the rest of my life was a mess. I dated a sociopath, and God bless her. But if somebody tells you that they doubt that they have the ability to love another human being, don't paint that red flag green. Run for the hills. And just I will give you that. If you get nothing else out of that message, if somebody says those words to you, run for your life. She said that to me several times during the course of this relationship, and there was so much manipulation, so much heartbreak, so much cheating, and I kept coming back for more. I got completely emasculated in that relationship, and there were so many times that I would come just broken, weeping. I was so broken at one point that I was literally curled up on the floor of the passenger side of the car, like not even on the chair, but on the floor in a ball. And I'm being told when I'm in this state, well, you just don't understand how women communicate. It was always my fault. It was never her fault. And I don't blame her for what happened, but I made an inner vow that if relationships with women that were going to be this tough, it would be easier for me to be gay. And so I tried to find comfort. I tried to find somebody that would just want me. And that's a whole other complicated mess. And for a short time, sin is fun for a season. And it seemed like there were all of these people that were so loving and so accepting and so not judgmental, and everything that I felt in the relationship I wasn't finding over here. There felt like there was deeply something missing, but I had hope that I'd be able to work that out. So she had heard that there were some, you know, that I'd been seen out with at these clubs. And so she called me up and we went out to lunch and we had the most honest conversation that we ever had. And I thought, oh my gosh, there's hope for me in this relationship with this girl who I didn't know was a sociopath at the time. I just had hope that it would work out. And all of this time being in the gay community, I was being told things like, it's not about gender, it's about loving a person. That it's just about connecting with a person, and whoever you find that person, that's just about that person. And so anyway, I found this girl came back into my life. We had this honest conversation, ended up hooking up. We're back together, and I'm like, you need to come out to the clubs that I've been going to. These people are so awesome. You'll love them. And so we went out dancing on Friday night, and I took her to this big gay club, and we went dancing, and all my friends were there, and I'm dancing with this girl, and we're making out, and one by one, people just came up to me, and this guy that had been like literally my best friend, we workout partner, good friends, shared a lot with each other. He's like, who's that? I'm like, what's this girl? Like, you know, the one I've been telling you about. Like, we got back together, and I think it was just about getting honest and getting past all of the stuff that we could never talk about before, and it's so amazing. And he's like, whatever, go back in the closet, Mary. And I'm like, you just told me last week that it was about loving a person. Yeah, whatever. And for all of the promise of acceptance and everything else, I felt more judged by that community than I ever had anywhere else. So anyway, Needless to say, the relationship didn't work out. And like a lot of other things, I developed an eating disorder called orthorexia, which is an unhealthy obsession with healthy eating. I was a vegan raw foodist, 100% vegan, 100% organic, 100% raw foodist. Meanwhile, there's things in my life that are going really great. Like I got a great job, got approved for a loan to buy a house, driving a fancy car, got in a relationship with a girl that was actually really, really great. We're talking about getting married, having kids, like about the future. And I would lay awake in bed at night watching her sleep, just feeling like a million miles away from her and just disconnected from my life. And I'm like, there's something missing. And I'd had this little card up my sleeve that if all of the things that I had hope in didn't work out, that I would go be a monk. But I wasn't going to be a Christian monk because Christians believed in fairy tales, and I was more into like New Agey, Buddhist, Jewish mysticism, like Kabbalah, and the thing where I could make myself the hero of my own story, where it was something that I could do. And I was, and you know, I look at my veganism and my raw foodism and all of the things that I was trying to do to make myself perfect on my own power, but falling short because there wasn't the connection in my heart, and I just felt like I was like looking in on my own life like through like a store window where it was like I know that I'm just right on the verge, but I can't seem to get in. So anyway, that's where I was at. And I went to go, I jumped ship from my life. I quit my job. I turned down the loan to buy the house. I broke up with the girl. I returned the car, paid the depreciation on it, and went to go live in this Essene Jewish raw food vegan spiritual community out in the middle of nowhere in Arizona. That is, for me, the pinnacle of me trying to fix my own life on my own power. And anyway, in the few minutes I have left with you before we get to shredding, I want to talk to you about the power to change. And that's really the name of this message is the power to change, because I tried to do things on my own power, and I always found it lacking. And I'll give you the quick version of how I got saved. I came back with my tail between my legs from that raw food vegan Jewish place out in Arizona, completely broken. You know, it's like there's something great about having hope, because you're always like hope in anything aside from God really just asks you to wait. So there's this waiting period. If I'm hoping in something, I'm waiting for it. But it's not really active. It's just I'm like standing there waiting for something to happen, believing that when something changes, then my life will make sense. And I hoped in that. But I finally got to the end of all of the things that I had hope in. And that is a desperate place to be in. But it's also the first time in my life where I was able to be teachable. And I had a mentor come into my life who happened to be Christian, and he challenged me. He's like, why do you have all of this prejudice against Christians? You know I'm a Christian, right? And I went into all of the things that I'd believed, and he said, I'm gonna challenge you with this. Why don't you go home tonight and look at all of the religious people you know, all of the people that believe various things, and just look at the fruit in their life. And be honest with yourself, who has the best fruit? And there was one couple that had been consistent in my life for years that were Christian, and they had the most miraculous things happen in their lives. Things that should not work out, worked out. Like crazy things that shouldn't work out, worked out. And they had a peace. Even when things looked like they were going to fall apart, they had a peace about themselves. And I would have dinner parties, have people over, and every single time that I had them over, people would ask about them. Nobody ever asked about anybody else, but they said there's something about that couple. And so when I was challenged with this, I thought maybe I'll just call them. And so I called them and I said, hey, can I go to church with you? And they weren't like, oh my gosh, our church has 7 services. We'll show up at any one. We'll pick you up. We'll do all this. They were just like, yeah, we're going to go to the 7 o'clock service. If you want to come with us, you can meet us there. We usually go out to coffee or dinner afterwards. And they just made it really casual. And it was like perfect for me. And so I went to church with them and I heard the gospel preached. And I thought the gospel was when you do good enough, then God will like you. Then he'll accept you. And what I heard is that when you figure out your identity, when you accept God as your father and you enter into this relationship with him like a father to a son, he will mature you in his time and in his way by his power. There's nothing that you have to do except let him be your dad. And that was actually good news for somebody that had tried so hard to do it on my own. That was actually good news. I was still on the fence about virgin birth, resurrection, and creationism versus evolution. I was like all the intellectual stuff that I had going on, but it was good news to me. And when I came into church, it would take a little while for God to really get a hold of my heart completely. But when he did, suddenly it became really important to get discipled. And so I went into something that was very similar to the internship that we have here. And in a year, just my life changed dramatically. I had more like movie quotes, song lyrics, everything, all of these things that I'd believed even about myself. I didn't even know where they came from and I'd never questioned them. There were all of these limiting beliefs that I had on my life that I didn't even know where they were from. And I started to figure out the promises that God had for my life, the identity that I had in him, and that because I'm his, all of these other things are possible. And when I got that, everything started to change. And all of these things that I thought my testimony disqualified me for, God showed me how all of the things that he'd brought me through would be able to be used for good for others. I came to this discipleship school and I thought, like, if they found out about my past, they would kick me out of their good person club. And as God started to reveal these things to me and I started to get more of his word inside of me, he started breaking these things off. I never thought that I would be saying half the things that I've said to you guys tonight from a stage. Like, I don't even know a lot of you people, and you guys know more about me than some of my family members knew about me for the first 35 years of my life, right? In a few minutes, God changes things. He changes people. So I only have a couple of minutes left and then we're gonna shred some stuff. And I want to invite you that if there's anything that you've believed, that it's like, if you've got these things in your head, like, God won't take this. It's just me. I've always been this way. Write it down. There's more room at the foot of the cross than there is potential for sin in the entire world. Christ paid an unlimited price to give you unlimited freedom. There is only potential for so much bondage in the world. Time has a beginning and an end. There's only so much that can happen during that time. There is more space at the foot of the cross for you just to bring that stuff, lay it down, shred it, let the past be the past. The greatest years of your life lie ahead. I've got 3 minutes left and I just want to share a couple of things with you. I read an article a few months ago about DNA. If you could bring that up on the screen, that would be amazing. It's the longest slide that's in that whole mess of slides. But I read this article about DNA and I love science. More and more, the more I study about science, the more it confirms the word of God. And I read this article, and if they can't bring it up, I'll just bring it up myself. But you got it? Okay, you don't got it. Maybe I'll bring it up. Okay, so anyway, it said, traumatic stress in the early life of a mammal influences its genetic material. Environmental trauma on what are called small non-coding RNAs, which are believed to be the intermediary between genes and the environment and are thought to relay signals from the environment to our DNA, affecting gene activity. Previous research has implicated SNCRNAs as the possible cause for the abnormal functioning of genes in many areas, in many diseases in the area of behavioral and mental health. Furthermore, SNCRNAs are said to be abundant in the mature sperm of mammals. Research suggests that they may have a role in transferring the effects of environmental experiences, not just to the next generation, but in up to 13 generations forward, resulting in a hereditary predisposition to depression and other forms of mental illness. So in other words, science has just figured out that generational sin is real. And just for any of you that are new to all of this, it comes through the Father's line. And I don't know about you guys, but I know for me that I know a little bit of my grandfather's sin. I don't know any of my great-grandfather's sin. I don't even know the name of my great-great-grandfather. But science has figured out that just in what they've been able to observe, that up to 13 generations can be affected by sin from the past. You know, you hear this like, oh, I was just born this way. God doesn't care how you were born. He's not going to leave you the way that you were born. He's going to give you a blood transfusion. Take your DNA, give you his DNA, so that you actually have the power to change your life. A worship leader quoted Philippians tonight that I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. I can do all things through Christ. I can't do all things on my own power to please Christ and then get empowered by him. I can do all things through Christ. He needs to change me first. We've all got stuff in our life. We're in process until the day we die. But God is faithful to complete every good work that he starts. The Bible promises that God is faithful to complete every good work that he starts up until the day that Christ comes back, which means we will always be in progress, but we will be progressing towards something. I know that it's true because I've experienced it in my life. If I hadn't gone through these things, I couldn't tell you with the assurance that I have that because I've experienced these things and I know that God is impartial, he doesn't have preferential treatment towards anybody. There's not one that he made, oh, that one's my favorite, but I don't really like that guy. God is not like that. And I know because he did it for me that he can do it for you. So if there are things in your life that you need to shred, there's nothing magical about these shredders. They're paper shredders. But what happens in your heart is where the magic happens. If you confess with your heart that Christ is God, that you believe that he can change you, all of the things that have been holding you back, all of the things that people have told you that you can never overcome that, that this disqualifies you. I want to tell you that some of those things are the very things that have qualified you to transform the lives of other people. So write them down, leave them here, bring them to the cross. So we're going to have a moment for ministry. Just a quick prayer. People are going to pray for you. Break those things off. Let you leave them in the shredder. Nobody's going to read what you wrote down. It's not to read, it's to shred. This is between you and God. This isn't between you and other people, but there will be people up here to minister after we get through the shredding. The ministry team is gonna stay up here. So if you need prayer, if you're here tonight and maybe don't know Christ, maybe don't have a relationship with him, we'll get prayer. There'll be time for that after shredding. But I just want to invite you, don't hold back. God can't take what you won't give. Just give it all to him, and he will give you a life beyond your wildest dreams. Can you bring up the slide of my family just really quick, and I'll end with this? This has been my life the last 4 years. This isn't how the devil wanted my story to end. And this is just the beginning. I feel like this is the beginning of my life, and so long I was just waiting for it to be done, and it's barely even started. I get to be a father to two amazing kids. I have a son. I have an incredible wife, my biggest support in the entire world. And all of this started when I just laid down my life and believed, had that we become fools for Christ's sakes, had that foolish belief that maybe it was possible that if I gave my life to him, God would make it better. So I just thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for allowing me to share this with you. I thank you for the opportunity, Drew and Emma. I love you guys so much. And and God bless you guys.
Thank you so much for joining us online. We hope you had a powerful experience. We want to take this time to personally help you navigate the next steps in becoming connected. If you made a decision for Christ today, need prayer, or want more information about our church, go to our website, c3sandiego.com. And if you didn't get a chance to give online during service and would like to contribute financially, you can go to c3give.com and click on the giving option that works best for you. We look forward to hearing from you. See you at church.